I'm Lina Mirmont, your host, and with a very special warming my soul announcement that we are opening a new series of our show where I'm going to have a co-host, Julian Lampert, who is my partner, who is my friend, who managed to be my son, and also tremendously uniquely talented pianist, composer, and a conductor. The main theme of our show is to have a conversation just about anything or everything. I wanted to make very clear that any concept, any facts, or any interpretations which are going to be here in this show is the result of our personal conviction, as a result of our personal understanding and interpretation. And if you do disagree, we welcome that. That means that you are listening to us, and that means that you have your own opinion. Your own opinion is welcome and respected. I like to introduce first thought, and I like to have Julian's thoughts on that. We all consumed now by this extremely complex and seemingly accelerating world around ourselves. Emotion seems to be looking for some kind of warming home, and yet they're struggling. Our mind seems to be searching for the solution, often craving for quick cuts. And we're just trying to succeed and to manage big picture with our personal tasks. Let's hear what Julian thinks about this. Young gentleman who has his own vision and his own wisdom. Julian, where we stand with all of that which I just talked about?
Well, you covered very large territory there. First of all, I'd like to say it's great to be with you and sharing the airwaves with you, and looking forward to doing this on a regular basis. We live in a very complex world in which there are problems that we've always had, the same problems for several thousand years. And I think that people very often assume that because some of these problems are so frightening and have such a dramatic impact, some people assume that we experience them for the first time, when in fact, when we step back a bit, we can see that the problems are actually very much similar, if not exactly the same, as the kinds that we had several thousand years ago. That's not to say that we don't have new problems which did not exist then. Absolutely, especially medically, we have a whole series of illnesses and diseases which were fairly rare longer ago, and vice versa. We've conquered a lot of diseases. So we have to be very careful in how we respond to these new issues that constantly bombard us, because with the progress of technology, we can sometimes be too easily deceived in perceiving these problems as something new and unprecedented, when we have to actually look deeper.
We had quite a head start. And not that we're lacking a substance here, but I do feel that perhaps this start can be somewhat disinviting, or maybe even slightly distasteful to some. I, however, like to continue on certain threads which Julian indeed brought up, because it is a reality. And something comes in mind. I, doing my journalistic homework, obviously, as many other journalists, coming across to some interesting thoughts, some ideas. And one particularly made impression on me, which had a question: why do we need to know our history? And this is such a boring question to any teenager. And then when I started to think a little deeper as an adult, in fact, the answer to that question was very simple, sincere, and I think extremely relevant. The answer was that with a knowledge of the history, one can know better oneself. What do you think about that?
I agree.
I'm glad you do agree. What particular aspects of the history perhaps you can relate to closer to pick up on your points where you're relating difficulties today with some historic problems which occurred before this century? So how would you place your own personal understanding of the history and the relationship between those events and the relationship between yourself and the history?
Well, I think that, again, a very complex question. I think that one of the most universal lessons, and it's the same lesson throughout every single dramatic historic event, especially those events which have had a lot of blood, wars, breakouts of diseases and so forth. Wars and diseases, I know that's not the most positive images that I'm choosing from history, but I'm choosing them because they perhaps give the most, they teach us the most dramatic lessons. And I think the one lesson, one of the lessons that is exactly the same when you look at everything from the Black Plague to the different wars of independence, the French War of Independence, American Wars of Independence, the religious wars, and any kind of cataclysmic, dramatic cataclysmic event shows us that through discipline and extremely hard work, we have the power to learn the lessons of history and really change the world. What happened to Russia after the First World War? What happened to Germany after the Second World War? What happened to Japan after the Second World War? Many, many examples of countries which were completely ravaged, devastated. In just a few years, when you really investigate it, in just a few years' time, they managed to get to settle their affairs in such incredible order, with such extraordinary discipline, also thinking about the American Revolution, that in a matter of really very, very short period of time, those countries got back on their feet. And it's a lesson that the lesson of discipline, unfortunately, it's a lesson that we often forget, but it might be the most valuable lesson that we have to learn.
This is extremely profound, and Julian made me to forget his young age, which hardly climbing with this excursus in the history. I like to take a break in a few seconds with a certain musical contemplation, which will be accompany our thoughts. But before that, I wanted to express one connection. The reason for this heavy start of our joint program, which, by the way, I was anticipating for quite some time, having already very prestigious guests, thinkers, artists, philosophers. I always knew that I have one of the best guests right here. And Julian was extremely busy with his professional work, and finally he agreed to join me for this series. And the beginning of it, extremely meaningful, very profound, and as I said, with some quite articulated, pronounced, sad note. There is no surprise to it. United States and the whole world, obviously under enormous impression of the tragedy which took place just a few days in Aurora, Colorado. It was something which, again, even though happened in our lifetime, it's very hard to accept as a reality. We do not need to search for words because feelings are there, and we do not need to struggle and express our feelings because they're so mutual. I especially like to stress the fact that our children, and the younger they are, the more complex perception of this tragedy for them. That is, our joint dealing with this event will have quite a long tail. And I personally do not subscribe to well-established theory that healing will kick in and will do the job and we'll move on with our lives full force and full vision for clarity and prosperity. I believe that each event of such magnitude does make a mark in our minds and does change our life. And it should. It makes our emotions that much richer, that much more complex. And if we are indeed disciplined, as Julian pointed in his expressions, that will help us to cope and indeed move forward, recognizing those difficult emotions, not be in denial, and be more alert, more aware what kind of a society we're living in and what kind of child's mentality and child's help might be needed from us adults. No child should be left without attention. And on this note, I'd like to shift into the musical contemplation, after which we will continue our discussion. Lena Mirmont and Julian Lampert on Lena Live. I will join Julian on a thought to change a little bit, not by much, but a little bit stream of our talks today. When do you think we are approaching certain changes where overpowering digital environment will somewhat more proportion to our human emotions? How do you see this? Where we are with that?
I think that we still don't quite know where we are with that. We're still orienting ourselves because as powerful as the digital technology is, it actually is still quite brittle. For example, in a lot of recording studios, even in the, well, not just recording studios, but that's an example that I've seen very often. Even in the greatest recording studios, the computers will freeze, will have a crash. It's something that's extremely common, and satellite television is another example where there are very, very frequent problems for customers, especially when it rains or snows, when the weather is bad. The technology is in the process of still revolutionizing our lives, but it's far from still having a kind of stability that we enjoyed with analog technology. So we have to be incredibly careful, super, super careful that we don't become spoiled by the quick satisfactions, the quick treats that digital technology affords us. Especially we can't afford that pleasure from blinding us of how much more we need to go with developing the technology so that it has a certain stability that will serve us better and serve us more securely. Another example that I found is that if you listen on if you listen to some radio stations on satellite radio, which is satellite radio, which is the might be the fanciest sort of radio technology that we have, very often in the call-in shows, the live talk shows, often have problems connecting callers, incoming callers, with connecting them to the air, to the airwaves. The talk show hosts often run into technical problems. So it's the technology is very far from being foolproof, and we're certainly doing much better. There's definitely improvements happening. There's no question, but we have a very long way to go, and we're still in the danger of being stuck in an illusion of this technology bringing us these very quick pleasures. We have to be careful that we don't lose the bigger perspective of where we need to go.
It's certainly very hard to resist the quick pleasures.
Yes.
And we just mentioned all this structure, and I created such a stressful pyramid of the world. The first one would love some quality of quick pleasures. Of course, it depends what kind of pleasures, at what circumstances, and all different scales of it. But coming back to what you're saying, if I understood you correctly, you're talking about still strong dependence from a backup system. And of course, your examples are mostly relating to somewhat inconveniences or maybe embarrassment when it happens on the air. But it is certainly much more critical when it has to do when we are on the air as a passengers or when we are in the hospitals as a patients. I'm sure you agree with that.
Yes.
I like to shift to another issue, if it is something you'll be inclined to discuss. With my gradual friendship with a computer, I can't believe I used the word friendship. Thanks to you, who taught me first how to on and off the computer, when I learned about that button, I felt that I know 50%. But then I kicked into usual process. The more you learn, the more you need to learn. So with dealing with a computer, I must confess that the convenience, resourcefulness, knowledge is really at the tip of your fingers. And if someone friendly enough to make money without leaving your own home is a tremendous triumph, especially in this economy. So I like to ask you, as a musician, where is the digital mentality and then technology kicked in into your professional activities, and how?
Well, for me, digital technology is strictly a tool of convenience and efficiency. I don't use digital technology to actually compose music. It's not, and I'm well aware of the fact that many composers and songwriters do depend on the technology for the actual creation of the music. For me, it's just a very fast way of, it's the fastest way for me to document my musical ideas. That's really the only reason I use it.
But you cannot disagree with the fact that very sophisticated keyboards sound almost as a piano, you also told me that you've been fascinated by some softwares which are sound like an orchestra. In fact, you demonstrated me one. Perhaps you could fool me, saying that this is greatest Toscanini's interpretation of Tchaikovsky concerto, and then I go find out that this is a Yamaha conductor. So you feel like a happy or a dispersed fool with all of that. So where we are as a humans, are we supposed to appreciate the technology and tremendous safety in our home, additional safety in our home, where we can listen to the orchestra without going to the concert hall? Or there is still this magnetic feeling of enormous emotion being at the concert hall, listening to the live orchestra and experiencing all this glamour of a live performance, where we are.
Unfortunately, the live concert, symphonic concert, is not as much of a prominent staple of our society as it used to be before. That has been observed already for a very long time. However, I think where I disagree with some people from the older school who claim that live performances are going to soon be dead. Actually, even Glenn Gould predicted that. I strongly disagree with that, because especially when you look outside of classical music, live music still is extremely popular in certain jazz clubs, Latin clubs. People go dancing, and even if the people in the discotheques and the dance clubs have DJs, most often, and they don't have live bands, they will have a DJ, but you still have people getting up from their, getting out of their homes and walking, traveling somewhere outside for musical entertainment.
You know what?
And that is, I don't think that will ever die.
You know what surprises me? It's some kind of paradox, because my immediate surroundings, and I do not mean necessarily close friends who particularly have their own artistic or some kind of intellectual interests, but just having a general conversations, people do want to socialize. And socialization can take a very, very many different life forms. Yet, we are faced with a more and more isolation. Now, we cannot keep our conversation close to the economics of it. How many people today can spend $200 going into Metropolitan Opera? I think just recently we had a conversation where the mother took her elderly grandmother to, I should say, the granddaughter took her elderly grandmother to the Metropolitan, and she had to save for this event for 6 months. So we are really faced with this economic challenges, where art, as I used to say to my students and to the parents of my students, became as a dessert. And you have even doubt Can you afford this dessert or not? So it's a paradox, because in this stressful time, the most important thing we need is to communicate through our emotion, through our human juice. And yet we greatly deprived because of a prosperity of this digital world, as I mentioned, but also this huge challenge of economics. So my question to you is, do you have a compromise to recreate some small gatherings at home, like a salon, something which we do at in our company, and to make sure that people are not forced to do something, not forced to listen to classical music, not forced particularly enjoy jazz or anything which will be offered to them, but they will bring their own ideas, maybe their own sadness, maybe their own interest, doubts, to have it very casual. I think we forgot how to pick up the phone and to say hello. It's always very strong ulterior motives. As you know, that is a very profound issue with myself, and when I'm going to touch it today. But these ulterior motives should not be only with a financial profit. Ulterior motives should be with some kind of human hello. Your thoughts?
Well, ulterior motive is is a tough issue, because we automatically attach ulterior motives as being something bad, something that that evil people, or well, not even necessarily evil, but just people who are not very good-willed. We assume that not good-willed people are the ones who have ulterior motives, but that's actually not true, because if we all did not have ulterior motives, we wouldn't survive. Whenever we want to accomplish something, we have an ulterior motive. I think it any time that we're discussing a problem or any kind of issue that is troubling our society, I think it's extremely important to see, before analyzing the problem to death, is to see if that problem is a symptom of maybe a larger problem. And that applies to us now, maybe like never before, because I would say almost all of the major problems that we do have in the world, especially the financial crises, are symptoms of a much larger problem, a problem that maybe goes back to what you touched on earlier of humanity orienting itself through this digital revolution, through revolutions in technology, and we're in the process, maybe of the last 10, 15 years, humanity is in the process of getting itself spanked, being forced to discipline itself, being forced to wake up from complacency and the lessons that are to be learned from that awakening are very, very difficult ones, and they're not lessons that we can learn overnight necessarily. However, on the other hand, revolutions have the power of making change, of enforcing change very, very quickly. And that's where we should really use our digital technology, which maybe above everything else gives us the power of speed. And if the technology can hasten our resolve to learn our lessons and move as quickly as possible to actually doing and implementing the things that we've learned, then we'll be on the right path. And I think that there are a lot of signs that that's happening. Absolutely, there are signs of that. But we still have a long way to go. And one of the people that I very, very strongly admire, I would say passionately admire, is our mayor, Mike Bloomberg, because he is one of the very, very few people in the political arena who, first of all, does not act as a politician whatsoever. He doesn't even look like a politician. But he is one of the few people in the public eye who is very, very straight with conveying his message of waking up, being extremely aware, and being extremely specific about exactly what needs to be done to solve certain problems. And I mentioned him because I think he's an example of a lot of the positive that is happening in the world, which will help us get out of this crisis that we're in now.
Well, you certainly widened the borders of my very modest premises of ulterior motives. I'm very thankful, frankly, very impressed, because as I call you, made these octopus connections, and you truly correlate our personal being in this world to the social. You being brave enough to touch on politics, but mostly important, you draw this panoramic view where we were, where we are, and where we like to be. Is it time for music now?
Yes, let's shift to something a little less heavy.
And I'm all for it.
For a lighter, on a slightly lighter note, and I will find something here that might be a kind of sorbet or a transition to what we'll discuss next.
And while you're looking for this, in fact, lively dessert, I wanted to make sure that our listeners know that Julian Lampert's music being played on BBS Radio already for quite some time. It's certainly available on iTunes. And he's finishing his fourth album. And we have some interesting prospects in the artistic and even commercial music world. So, Julian, are we ready?
Yeah.
We are. So what are we going to listen to?
We're going to listen to a piece called Scherzino.
Scherzino.
It means a little joke.
And
in Italian.
With all of you, Lena Mirmont and Julian Lampert and Lena Life are going to participate in Scherzino. Lovely interlude, and it reminds me something. I'm preparing my own modest piano thought, which I hope will be recorded, and then I will join Julian's gallery of music. Of course, mine is much more modest, but at my own rights, and I'm looking forward to air this as well when we will have time to record that. I'd like to ask you about some memories which we had very recently regarding some history of journalism. Since you talked about politician, I'd like to continue this proper theme and to touch a little bit on journalism. Subject somewhat became predictable. A bit boring, I have to say. Some people think academic, but I like to take it from another point of view. You know, to be a journalist, you do not need to have a special degree, but you need to have true special personality. And why do I mention about this? Because we are so much in the hands of this digital information, which you mentioned. How quickly we can get information. And I also like to say that true journalism had its problem, and I would say inevitably lost its quality, because anyone can get into internet, have its own interpretation, vision. So it's very hard to compete with all this numerous information. Saying that, there is a still classic roots. There is a still true journalism where number one to me, personality of the journalist will present itself in unbeatable quality with the information the journalist is delivering. I'm always interested in interpretation. And I don't quite agree with the statement that we only deliver the news, we don't interpret the news. It's inevitably you have to interpret the news. You cannot be a machine, and you, in this particular case, you're not a computer. So I'd like to ask you, you as a young generation, what is your expectations of the journalism today? What would you like to change? What would you like to resurrect? And how would you shape those two?
Actually, I think that this is where the technology, digital technology, really shines and shows its one of its extraordinary benefits, because we're capable. I feel that I'm capable of getting an extremely real and truthful picture of certain events around the world, not necessarily through television, but more sometimes through television, but much less so, because the journalism on TV is where the integrity of the profession is really being compromised. It's not what it was before. But through the internet, we can find some examples of pretty extraordinary journalism. So what I would like to see, the most important change that I would like to see is for certain journalists who are not as well known and not as prominent as the ones that we see on TV, for them to have a much louder voice, for us to be able to hear them more loudly and to have them more widely available. I think that in terms of mainstream media, overall, the BBC and certain news services in Scandinavia, like Finland and Sweden, overall, they might be the best in the world, because it's very rare to find a poor news program in those networks. The problem in the U.S., of course, is that the news media is focused more on selling than on informing, and of course that's a very serious problem, because you don't seek the truth because of its verifiable, undeniable existence. You're seeking information, or you're filtering information for the purpose of selling a product, and that philosophy does not belong in the news media. And unfortunately, in the United States, and in other parts of the world, but especially in the U.S., unfortunately, that's becoming a serious problem.
Very sad but realistic, not only observation but experience. I will put a little seed in our next program regarding some issue of education, and I do not mean to sound boring and scholastically academic person preaching something which everyone knows but cannot do much about it. But what I like to say, to add to what you just said, that if general level of education, and I do not mean particular school, I'm talking about quality of thinking, quality of mind, quality of ability to comprehend information, became a target. It's very easy to sell sensationalism to the mind where no substantial information occupies this mind. It's very easy to sell any kind of entertainment with its seductive elements of sex and, unfortunately, crime. It goes and flies well. And that's one of the syndrome of the society cavity and that complacence which you talked about. So education is not particularly something which everyone gets being in regular schools. I did have some guests, and we did talk about even homeschooling. But coming back to what you just said, It is still, I believe, a strong tradition which lies in New York Times. Of course, New York Times changes its changes address from home office. It's now in internet office. And I particularly missing it, not as much as older generation, but the picture of having breakfast, coffee, orange juice in New York Times in one's head became somewhat a classic symbol of American. It's became a leitmotif of political, social, artistic, and other sides of life. So now we're going on the internet. And I'm guilty as well also because I do the same thing. Why? Because it's convenient. And also, it's for free. It pains me to see often promotions of delivery of New York Times. And offer gets lower and lower. I wish our gasoline will be just as low
yes.
as New York Times promotions for delivery. So I like to give you an opportunity to finish with your final thought and then with your music, which will perhaps conclude our first edition of Lena Live and Julian Lampert, with me being Lena Mirmont. And I will wish for myself, everyone, sunny and peaceful weather. And I will give Julian's voice, his wisdom, and everyone knows beautiful language, to conclude this first joint program.
Well, I'm extremely thrilled to be joining my mother here, Lena Mirmont, in this show, and looking forward to many more dialogues together on the air. I feel that in the long run, if we do not forget our human roots, if we come to the realization that, in fact, the biggest financial gains we will ever make will happen as a result of the human investment that we badly need to make, the human investment to our children through education, through the support that we need to give to our children from day one, so that as few of us as possible in this world will feel like we have nowhere to go to in a desperate moment. If we feel that we can even just have one person whom we can run to, that's already a great victory. And the gentleman who committed the disaster in Aurora did not have that person. And we saw what the result was. We need to very quickly return to the basic lessons which we realized actually long, long ago, which were being taught by our ancestors, that there is nothing more valuable than the human investment that we make to ourselves, to our children. And actually that investment is always going to guarantee very, very large dividends in the long run. On that note, we're saying goodbye. Hope that you enjoyed our program, and we're looking forward to seeing you next Tuesday when we're going to have Dr. Diane Schwartzbein, an extraordinary physician in our time, world-renowned, who's done some groundbreaking work in medicine. Hope that you'll join us next Tuesday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. This is Julian Lampert and Lena Miermont signing off on Lena Live. Thank you.